Jason Lockenfora joins us. Good morning, Jay. Nowhere else to start but the Seattle game from yesterday. On one hand, you have a little bit of shock that the Seahawks are 3-3, but on the other side, how don't you love the stones of Jeff Fisher? Between, I want to get your thoughts on the punt, the mister. I don't even know what you call it, a misdirected punt or whatever, where they seem to kind of suck the Seahawks in on that punt return, and then of course the fake punt by the Rams to get that first down and seal the win.
You know, sometimes we talk about trap games and we talk about, you know, teams that have nothing to lose and teams that kind of put all their preparation into one game and kind of have a chance to win their Super Bowl in September or October or November or whatever. Teams that probably aren't going anywhere that pull off a couple of big wins that no one saw coming that blows up everybody's survivor polls and yada, yada, yada. And this was one. Obviously, a difficult week for the Seahawks. They come off that tough loss to Dallas. They have the whole Percy Harvin fiasco going on. You know, they're scrambling to get that done. They're getting new kids integrated into the offense who hadn't played much before. And they're playing a team that's dangerous because they're kind of playing with house money. They may or may not be back in St. Louis next year. They're kind of sort of almost free agents even in their own town. They don't have a lease after this year. They've had a bad start to the year, more injuries, more blowout losses. You know, but since the bye week seem to have put a few things together defensively. And obviously Jeff Fisher, I mean, that was you pull out anything that's ever been in your back pocket and you throw it out there. And you do what it, you know, what it takes to win. They had, remember the week before, they played San Francisco very tough. And if not for that questionable pass interference call, a few things here or there, it really looked like the Rams were going to win that game. They had a bad call go against them. They gave up the 80-yard bomb to Brandon Lloyd. And then that, you know, kind of turned things the other way. So I'm not stunned. I'm mildly surprised. But that's a team that I thought would be better than it is in St. Louis. And that quarterback, Austin Davis, makes plays. I mean, he may be earning himself a job there beyond this year.
What do we take from the Percy Harvin event? Because he was their biggest playmaker at wide receiver, and they essentially gave him away for almost nothing.
Well, yeah. I mean, it'll probably end up being just a sixth-round pick. I mean, the most compensation is a four, and that's if the Jets, you know, keep him around, which, you know, it's hardly guaranteed. They felt like he was on the verge of becoming a cancer that could undermine their entire season, that could undermine all the sort of goodwill that they had built up, all the camaraderie, you know, all the cohesion, you know, all the buy-in that Pete Carroll got. And Pete Carroll still has a lot of that collegiate spirit going on. There's some rah-rah stuff. And if you're highest paid player, more or less, I mean, he's $25 million over 2 years, a lot of money. If he's not bought in and he's, you know, basically flaunting his insubordination, refusing to go in games with the game on the line in the fourth quarter, and you're trailing and he's healthy, when he's kind of dividing the locker room a little bit, when he's beating guys up, when he's undermining the quarterback a little bit, then, you know, are you going to be able to reach this kid? Or are you cutting your losses? And there came a point where the Vikings felt like they couldn't reach him anymore. And Seattle, which has, again, because of that same collegiate spirit and everything else, they have been willing to take on some quote-unquote bad eggs and try to make it work. They've been willing to draft kids who have quote-unquote character issues. You know, they trade for Marshawn Lynch. They draft Bruce Irvin. And they won a Super Bowl that way. And they've been a competitive team. And I still think that they'll play better football this season. But they felt like we got to get this guy out now. We can't have someone literally dictating when they play and why they play and how they play. We can't have 52 guys pulling in one direction and this guy and pulling in the opposite and maybe bringing some other guys with him.
And the receiving corps now, I mean, these are not household names. Doug Baldwin, no. Curse. I mean, these are nobodies.
Richardson, who they drafted, the speedy kid. You know, he'll play more now. The Norwood kid from Alabama, who's not really speedy, but just has a knack of making plays, at least he did in Alabama, finding seams and getting himself open. I mean, very young. You know, Doug Baldwin, probably the most accomplished guy of that group. They're going to run the football a heck of a lot now. I don't think you'll see Marshawn Lynch saying, where are my carries anymore? And they may even add something to that running back group here before the trade deadline. I wouldn't rule them out looking to try to find a Percy Harvin light somewhere if there is one who could be available.
The Cincinnati Bengals get blanked by Indianapolis. They had 10 three and outs in this game, 8 in a row, in fact, which I believe is a record. So I guess the question is, between the tie a week ago and now a shutout loss, what's happening in Cincy?
Well, they're crumbling from the inside out. That team, when they were 3-0, when everybody, including me, was like, this might be the best team in the NFL, their offensive line, if you recall, not only was Andy Dalton not sacked the first 3 weeks, no one touched him. I mean, no one laid a hand on him. Rarely did he even have to pick up his feet and move. They had a healthy A.J. Green, at least to start the season. They had a healthy Tyler Eifert. They still had hope that Marvin Jones would be back by the middle of the season. And they were surprising people with some of the stuff Hugh Jackson was running. Now Andy Dalton's running for his life. He looks, like a novice at times without A.J., without his security blanket. He's forcing balls. He's regressing into some of his old bad habits. There isn't confidence that anybody can make a play downfield. So it's all little dump-offs and screen passes to Gio Bernard, and that's become pretty easy to sniff out. The running game has been hit or miss. The twin sort of towers of Hill and Bernard. Gio had a big game last week against Carolina, but everybody's running the ball on Carolina. And certainly that 37-37 tie at home feels a whole lot more like a loss right now as they're staring up at Baltimore in the division standings, and they play Baltimore this week. Defensively, they cannot muster a pass rush. Geno Atkins, to me, I guess he's healthy, but he's not the same guy he was before, you know, season-ending surgery. He's having a hard time sort of getting his legs back under him. Carlos Dunlap's really the only guy you have to worry about blocking up front right now. And then when Vontaze Burfict is in the game, their defense seems to have a plan and a purpose, and can be downright nasty to still have to deal with at times. He's been in and out. I mean, they're saying it was a neck injury. He's had at least two concussions already this year. They have a coach who likes to talk about mild concussions and, you know, the media being to blame for why these guys are out so long. And now they're calling it a neck injury or a stinger, I guess, for Burfict yesterday. But he didn't play much yesterday. You have to worry about that at this point. They just, Leon Hall, the one top corner they had left, he came out of that game. They had a couple guys that they counted on to be difference makers in their front seven, Ray Maluga and Emmanuel Lamore. They didn't play at all. So how many of those guys will be back for the Ravens? Certainly not all of them. That team's in some trouble right now. And I know that the narrative in the summer was, well, yeah, they lost Jay Gruden, but Hugh Jackson's better. And they lost Mike Zimmer, but that defense can run itself now because of everything Zimmer's installed over the last few years and all the continuity. Well, I don't know. There's also something called brain drain, and they seem to be a team that needs to come up with some new ideas right now. I still think they have a quality roster. I still think they'll be better in the second half of the season as they get healthier, but they may be catching the Ravens at the wrong time this week.
I heard a stat on the weekend that really opened my eyes. The Chicago Blackhawks apparently have more wins at Soldier Field in 2014 than the Bears.
Yeah. Yeah, and it got ugly there yesterday, not just on the field where, I mean, that game wasn't as close as the score. I mean, the Bears could not get out of their own way. I mean, on defense, they had two guys who kind of looked like they were trying and knew what was going on. They had, you know, Jeremiah Ratliff up front. And then their young stud corner, Kyle Fuller, was playing well. Then Fuller broke his hand and left the game, and they just fell apart completely. And had nobody who could make a play in the secondary. Ryan Tannehill, I mean, he had all day to make throws, other than the four or five times that Ratliff got some pressure. And he was just picking out receivers left and right. Their secondary was a mess. And offensively, they had no clue. I mean, they had no plan. Jay Cutler was sort of that same old Jay Cutler, just, you know, very nonchalant, doing his thing, throwing a couple picks, taking a bunch of sacks. They got their offensive line back. That should have been a statement game for them, or at least a chance to have a statement, and instead they had guys screaming at each other in the locker rooms afterwards. Brandon Marshall going off on Cutler, going off on the kicker. Mark Trestman is in a very interesting spot now. I mean, that's a guy who not everyone you talk to felt like he was cast out to be an NFL head coach, maybe more of a brilliant coordinator type But in times of crisis like this, is he going to be able to get all 53 guys back on the same page? Is he going to be able to relate to, you know, some of the players on that defense? Is he going to be able to run things at a macro level the way they need to be run? It's going to be very interesting down the stretch here. I didn't think they'd be a factor in the division. I thought Green Bay would run away with it. I thought that they would quickly learn to rue the day that they gave Jay Cutler $18 million plus a year. And we'll have to see what this means down the line. Does this team pull out of this, or is this who they are? And if this is who they are, what does that mean for their structure moving forward? Their GM is going to – if this is the kind of season Jay Cutler has, and if you keep going back to last year in the eight games that Josh McCown played and say, why was that offense so good then but not with Trestman? And if Trestman can't just cure Jay Cutler of all that ails him, then why did they give him all that money, and what are they doing here?
Jason Lycanfora with CBS Sports, our NFL insider for Shanks Sports Grill. I just want to double back to Baltimore. They've won 2 in a row, 4-1 in their last 5. And they've been blowing teams out. They have a league best 89 net points. And watching Joe Flacco, he's on pace for a career year. Is this strength of schedule stuff, or are they kind of quietly, like I say, blowing teams out and flying under the radar as we're watching the Colts and the New England?
It's a little bit of both. And, you know, you have to account for the fact that they match up a lot. Look, scheduling, no, it's like the dirty little secret in this league. Schedule matters immensely. It matters which division your division matches up with in the other conference. It matters when you catch teams, whether it's early or late, how healthy they are, what have you. The AFC North gets the NFC South. If you've watched any football this year, you realize the NFC South is dreadful. Somebody may win that division with 7 wins. So far, the Ravens have beat the snot out of Carolina, Atlanta, and Tampa, which you should do. And certainly not everyone's done it. You know, Tampa beat Pittsburgh. Some other teams in that division have struggled with the NFC South teams. The Ravens haven't. They've unloaded on those guys, and they flexed their muscles. They've built up a lot of confidence within that offense. And then part of it is just they're better. They have an offensive line this year. They didn't last year. And that line should be getting healthier. They feel like they may have their left tackle and their left guard back for this game and this weekend in Eugene Monroe and Kelechi Osemele. That would be huge. If even one of them were back for the Bengals, that would be huge. They've upgraded at center. They've upgraded at right tackle. And Gary Kubiak's a hell of a coach. Gary Kubiak, I tend to think Gary Kubiak's going to be a head coach again next year. I don't know that the Ravens are going to be able to keep him more than 1 year, which, you know, isn't good news for Joe Flacco and those guys. But that they know that offense, people are very comfortable in it. And gradually we've seen more people figure it out. First it was Steve Smith. Then Owen Daniels emerged when Dennis Pitta got hurt. And then now Torrey Smith in the last 2 weeks has been a real factor. It seems like he's found that role in the offense. And they're running the ball like a demon. Doesn't matter if it's Forsett or Pierce or Taliaferro. There's carries for all those guys and there's yards for all those guys because of the offensive line. And their schedule sets up really well in December. If they can survive November, that's a team that could reel off 4 or 5 straight wins to end the season. So I think they are dangerous. And defensively, they've gotten healthier in their secondary. That was a real issue coming into the year. Now Ladarius Webb is back to playing like a very good slot corner. And they survived the first 6 weeks. They didn't have a free safety on that roster. I mean, they tried to tell you that they would, but they had no safety whose natural instinct was to cover. They had all in-the-box safeties. Will Hill is back from that 6-game suspension. He's a damn good cover corner. And that secondary may have gone from a liability to a strength. So they've rushed the hell out of the passer the last 2 weeks. Now, is that just because they were playing, you know, Atlanta and Tampa? Maybe. We'll find out this week against the Bengals.
Just quick thought on the AFC West. We saw Kansas City win in San Diego yesterday, and now the Chargers turn around and have to go to Denver on Thursday in a short week. What do you make of those three teams, and if there's room for all three in the postseason like last year?
You know, I got to tip my cap to the Chiefs. I thought after a couple weeks that their true colors were showing, and they were a team that was going to benefit from the schedule last year, and then the tougher schedule this year would humble them. They had a very slow start offensively. Alex Smith was not good the first 2 or 3 weeks. Then a young offensive line looked bad, and Jamaal Charles was hurt. Now they've got everything rolling. They got Dwayne Bowe back from his suspension and back integrated into that offense. I still don't think they're overloaded with playmakers, but when they run the football like they can, it's going to be trouble for whomever they face. And defensively, despite all the injuries, they've got the pass rush going. They have people making plays. So I think in a watered-down AFC, I think they'll be a factor to the end. I would still defer to San Diego and Denver in terms of who wins that division. But Kansas City very well could hang around that wild card spot and maybe sneak in again.
Jason, appreciate it as always, man. We'll talk to you Thursday. Enjoy the Monday Nighter, if possible, tonight. I know it's a challenge some weeks, but we'll do our best, and we'll talk to you Thursday.
Sounds good, guys. Enjoy the game. Thank you.
You bet. There's Jason Lackenfor, our NFL insider.